As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
This beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
That's what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't think I have tampered with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, national writer at The Athletic. Here, as always, with my West Coast brother, Anthony Slater. We are in the same city, and Slater, as much as I love you, I'm going to bounce right over you and bring in our guy, Law Murray, Clippers beat writer. This is an LA podcast, guys. We are all in the same city. We're not in the same room, but I can see y'all on my screen, and I certainly saw y'all at the arena the last couple of days. What is going on, gentlemen?
Feels good to be on the Tampering Podcast. I feel like I'm tampering right now.
I think this is visit number two.
I love the doubleheader. You mentioned all being in the same arena. You know, I cover an afternoon Warriors-Clippers game, and usually, you know, let's say I'm writing for two and a half, three hours post-game. It's like a deserted arena at midnight around me. Instead, it's like all these Lakers and Pistons writers are walking in. I'm walking out to... First of all, another pregame meal, which ends up being a postgame meal for me. And then Frank Vogel's in there doing pregame. I'm like, man, this is some activity.
It's a lot.
Usually I'm depressed at the end of the night.
Well, that's a little heavy. We need to work on that.
Maybe depressed is too strong. Usually I'm just lonely at the end of the night, right? Empty arenas. You guys know empty arenas late at night are just...
Yeah, there's a cool vibe. I mean, I feel like I feel guilty because we don't have James Edwards on the show because he's been in town as well. Our Pistons beat writer, a lot of athletic presence in LA, but the Staples Center experience, you know, it's not crypto until Christmas Day, but it is something wild to watch because, you know, AEG obviously owns it and the activity and the action that runs through that building is insane, you know, and on these doubleheader days, you know, to see the turnover is pretty wild. And then like on Saturday, they had an LA Kings hockey game. They had some sort of truck slash car convention that I'm literally right now looking out my window and seeing like the remnants of. They know how to put on a show in this place. And to your point, Slater, on the basketball side, there was just a lot going on, right? So, you know, we on the show today are going to certainly talk Clippers because we got Law on here. And I think below the radar, they are not only a good team, but a fascinating team and one that we're going to be talking about more and more later in the year. I just think we've forgotten that Kawhi Leonard might come back. And that's going to be a very big deal if that's, you know, in fact, what happens. But we also got an interesting week, Slater, where the Warriors and the Phoenix Suns have a pretty cool, you know, set of games that is going to tell us a lot about the two best teams in the NBA right now. Let's go down that road because you and I, sat there watching the Warriors, you know, make pretty quick work of the Clippers. It was a close game, nip and tuck till the second half. But like I wrote today, and having not been around the Warriors a ton to this point in the season, you know, a little bit like the 30,000 foot view was, it's just the Warriors show is back. And I didn't really realize that. I knew they were winning ball games at an incredibly high clip. But when you go on the road with this team and during their 5-year run, I traveled with them a ton. Like, there is nothing like the crowds they bring and, you know, what Steph Curry inspires with the way he plays and the vibe. And there was part of me that I thought it was gone forever. And I'm looking around Staples yesterday going, damn, like, we're doing this again. You know, Steph is playing with the crowd and just everything that comes with the Warriors it seems like it's back. But what do you think there?
Yeah, no, it started on the recent road trip because they've had a weird start to the season where it was Staples Center opening night against the Lakers. And that wasn't any type of like, you know, Warriors show. It was more just like, you know, they were debuting the Westbrook Lakers and it was TNT was here. That just felt like a big NBA game in general, not a Warriors game. And then they played in Sacramento and OKC early on. And then they had an 8-game homestand. And that's when they built all the momentum. And then they went on that 4-game road trip out east. And it started in Charlotte where it was just Steph Curry fans and jerseys and Davidson, just like Steph stuff everywhere. But you're like, you know, this is Charlotte. That's kind of normal. It's his hometown. And then they went to Brooklyn and they pounded the Nets and Warriors fans took over Barclays and were chanting MVP for Curry at the free throw line. They stayed after the game. And while he's doing the TNT sideline interview after the game, they're chanting MVP as he's going off the court. And you're like, well, this is weird. Like, this does feel vintage Warriors. They're taking over Barclays. And then they went to Cleveland and they have history in Cleveland, and it was just like all the Cavs fans cared about pregame was like raucous boos on him and Draymond Green, and it felt like the villains of old, right? You're like, okay, yeah, this is kind of vintage in that sense too because of the history they have with Cleveland. And then they went to Detroit and Steph Curry and Draymond Green didn't play, and all the Detroit fans were like up in arms that they didn't play. They're like, the one time a year we get to see this show. And then, you know, you're in the arena and there's still all these Steph people and they're just looking for a look at Steph. And then he comes out in the first quarter to just walk to the bench and the entire arena explodes in applause and everyone's taking videos of him walking to the bench in a warm up and just sat down and like they were cheering that. And it was like, man, so to your point, it has felt like that recently. And I think, you know, Law, you could maybe speak to this too, because this was your first road Warriors game of the year. It was back in Staples yesterday. I mean, that was like a pro Warriors crowd.
Yeah, man. This Sunday game was a matinee, you know, 12:30. We've had a few of them in Staples the last week or so. It was the third in 8 days for the Clippers. And so you saw what the crowd was like for the Pistons. You saw what the crowd was like the week before for the Mavericks, which Luka could have played but didn't play. But it was different. It was different right away. And like even the game operations, you know, they do the Undertaker theme song when the Warriors starting lineup is announced. Like, you just knew it felt different. If you were just in a bunker somewhere and didn't realize what time it was, it didn't feel like a 12:30 game in a lot of ways. So the energy was there. The Clippers, they always bring some kind of crowd and you never quite know who they're cheering for. Like, we had some Sundays where the Ball brothers were in Staples consecutive Sundays. You had the Hornets and LaMelo first, and then the week after the Bulls came with Lonzo, and a bunch of people from Chino Hills came out and let it be known that they were there for the Ball brothers, but then the Clippers took over. Warriors games, even going back to the, you know, Lob City era, they always take Staples Center over for Clippers games. And that was the case Sunday as well.
Law, two follow-up thoughts real quick. What's funny is you just connected dots on my own psyche. And what I mean by that is yesterday, Slater and I did his All 82 Warriors pod, and I pulled out this random Undertaker reference in talking about Isaiah Hartenstein and the way that he was like kind of carrying himself on the court. I'm not even a big WWE guy. I'm no Jason Jones. We all know he loves his WWE, but I didn't even know that they played the Undertaker theme. So clearly in the recesses of my brain, you know, maybe that's how that came to be. The other thing here is that the,
you guys, watch Succession.
You just rolled through.
HBO?
Yes.
I've never seen it.
Well, anyone, any listener that does, when the Warriors were announced at Cleveland, they played the Succession, like that piano thing.
Oh, yeah.
And that seemed to get the crowd going. And that led to the big boos for Draymond Green gets just rained down boos in Cleveland. It's impressive. Anyway, sorry.
No, you're good.
I was trying to,
you're trying to clean up my brain fart. Yeah. No, here's because I do this every once in a while on the pod. Quick historical, or I guess context that we need to tease for later in the pod. Part of the reason the Phoenix and Suns are out front with nobody around them is that you got so many squads missing star players, right? So we knew about Kawhi and the Clippers. We're going to talk a little later in the pod about Denver because this Michael Porter Jr. news is obviously not a good thing. And they were already down Jamal Murray. Mike Singer, the Denver Post, had broken the story that Porter's going to have some kind of surgery this week, tentative scheduling. But, you know, in the absence of all these teams that were supposed to be elite, you know, the Warriors keep forging ahead and doing their thing. So let's kind of keep it there for a minute. But Slater, these Suns matchups, you know, you couldn't kind of script it any better. The record is only one game different. You know, each team gets a game on its home floor. I think it's going to be a ton of fun. I mean, what, if any, meaning could there possibly be this early in the season with this matchup?
Well, I mean, I think we're all getting the sense that this might be a West Finals. And if it is a West Finals, you start to look at like, what are the soft spots for each in the matchup? And, you know, I'll probably write about this today, but I want to see DeAndre Ayton against non-center Warriors lineups against Draymond Green, where Draymond Green lives like kind of trying to punk opposing bigs at times and like, sure, try to post me up essentially. And DeAndre Ayton, Law knows this. I mean, he was great against small ball in the playoffs, right? I mean, he was great in that Clippers series, and that was a concern because what Gobert didn't do, Ayton kind of was able to do. But the Warriors small ball, because of Draymond Green, is just like a different level when they're at their most octane. So I just want to see those minutes on one side. On the other side, you know, the Warriors can be vulnerable. Last year, they were one of the worst rebounding teams in the league. It's kind of been an undertold part of this early season. They've survived defensively. They're a top 10 rebounding team, top 10 defensive rebounding team, despite no bigs, really. I mean, Kevon Looney's their starting center. He's 6'9", and he can't jump. And yet they just like team rebound really well. So, you know, like the softness inside. Then you have Chris Paul against Steph Curry in the Warriors, as we all know that has its long history dating back to those Clippers, you know, Lob City matchups. And then, you know, the rise of Devin Booker in this realm. Like, can he take over one of these games? There's a lot to get to, I think, in the matchup. I don't know. What interests you guys?
What interests me, man, is you mentioned Ayton and that lineup against how Golden State can just really destroy centers. And with all the success the Suns have had so far this season, they played 284 minutes with their nominal starting lineup, right? Paul, Booker, Bridges, Crowder, and Ayton. They're still getting outscored for the season with that starting five, you know? So in the Suns' case, they've been really successful when they bring JaVale in, because only 67 minutes with those other four guys, they're outscoring teams by 33 points on the season. That seems noisy, but again, it's no late November, so it's not exactly small sample size. Like, the Suns have upgraded that position, and you just wonder how that is going to play out against a Golden State team that, you know what they're going to do offensively. They're going to run, they're going to cut, they're going to pass, and they're going to find their shooters. And that's not even the best part of their team. Like, the best part of the Golden State team for me is how they defend, how they just wait for you to make the mistake so that they can unleash the machine. So, I want to see how the Suns deal with that, being that the Suns are really big on controlling the pace, controlling every possession. The Warriors just speed you up, and that's what makes this matchup fascinating.
Yeah, the JaVale thing is kind of wild, man. I mean, just this guy to go from, you know, the Shaft in a Fool days to now being how many rings he got at this point? We got three, right?
Three.
Yeah, three rings.
With the Warriors. Three. The Lakers ring and two Golden State
and
rings.
Two Golden State rings. And then, you know.
And gold medal. Gold medal.
And a gold medal. And you're talking about somebody who, you know, I love the backstory on the Suns where Chris Paul talks to him when JaVale's with Denver and essentially just loved the way that he was competing when they matched up and then talks about joining up. And then you fast forward to this preseason and you got the DeAndre Ayton situation with his contract. And he obviously wasn't happy with not getting the max, not sure how things are going to go. Ayton ends up having that knee issue and JaVale saves the day for what? 8-9 games where, you know, part of this winning streak that is obviously at 16 games now. I mean, he's been a huge highlight. The thing about the matchup that also jumps out is that, you know, 1-2 in record, but man, Slater, I know, you know, you're always quick to kind of mention the Warriors now, like relatively soft schedule. And I get that part, but as far as how much they've been beaten up on teams, it's wild that the net rating between the Warriors and Suns, I mean, you got a massive gap between the two. It's 13.6 best in the league for the Warriors and 7.1 third in the league for the Suns. I mean, they're almost doubling them on that front.
The Warriors have won 10 straight home games by double digits. I mean, they're just blowing everybody out. I think, you know, something like 14 or so of their 18 wins are by double digits. And then their two losses are one in overtime, and the other one was like a, you know, 2-3-point loss in Charlotte. So they just had, I mean, every game they're either absolutely blowing you out or, you know, the rare time they lost, they barely lost. So that equals this absurd net rating. But again, I mean, sometimes that can be noisy, you know, as Law kind of said earlier. They've been playing tougher games lately, though. I thought it was a really good win. I thought they were going to lose in LA on an afternoon, and they came out with energy. You know, the win they had in Brooklyn, they've had some of these signature wins recently, just as Phoenix just went into Brooklyn on the second side of a back-to-back and won that. The JaVale thing, because he was non-guaranteed before he got to the Warriors. Remember that? I mean, I think he had stress fractures in his leg in Dallas. He, Carlisle didn't seem to like him, and like he couldn't get it, anybody to give him a guaranteed deal. Then he came to the Warriors. They unlocked him as this just lob threat around four Hall of Famers. They had this lineup that they threw out there that was, you know, Curry, Clay, Durant, Draymond, JaVale. Imagine if you're JaVale in that lineup. And I think he dunked something like 230 times in two seasons with them. And got, I think, like, you know, maybe like a $6-7 million per year deal with the Lakers. And, you know, everything's gone well from there. What's interesting to me, though, is JaVale is perfect with like the Chris Paul pairing, right? I'm sure, you know, half his points are probably lobs from Chris Paul. It reminds me a little bit of the Chris Paul Capella lob threat that the Warriors had to solve in those Rockets series where Draymond kind of tries to play that cat and mouse game. So as we talk about this matchup, I just Draymond trying to shut down those lobs to Ayton and to JaVale, you know, in the pick and roll, it's a lot of high ball screen stuff will be good to watch.
The Suns get the tough little twist on the schedule. I mean, the Warriors are playing them Tuesday and then getting two off days and then, you know, hosting them on Friday. The Suns have the Pistons in between. Pistons are obviously making their way through the West. But, you know, the other setup here that is, you know, worth reminding folks of is Suns are coming off, you know, beating Brooklyn, which is not, you know, they're not the world beaters we thought they'd be, but they're still pretty damn good. Obviously, no Kyrie. James Harden's still struggling. And they're winning games, but, you know, they beat Brooklyn 113-107 just a few days back. So the legitimacy factor for me on the Phoenix side is there. Extremely impressive for them to also continue to compartmentalize the Robert Sarver situation, or seemingly that's what they're doing. You know, they haven't said a ton publicly, in terms of that situation where the investigation continues on their owner, who obviously was accused of some pretty terrible things. I talked to Chris Paul briefly right after that story broke when they rolled through Sacramento. And admittedly, I went into this shoot around, like if Chris felt like, you know, opening up big time about, you know, his thoughts and views and perspective on the matter, then, you know, being a media member who that does this for a living, like we would have that talk. And he just shook his head. He's like, nah, we're hooping. Like, that's it. You know, they're just kind of clocking in, clocking out. And obviously, you know, not letting that distract him.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Should we talk Porter just because of the impact? I mean, as we talk about the West and the different layers of the West, and we'll get to the Clippers, who, you know, particularly if Kawhi comes back, I think, recharge right into the conversation. Denver, does Denver just fall off at this point? I mean, they still have a rehabbing Jamal Murray, and then Michael Porter's out for the year.
Yes, I think they fall off. I mean, the Jamal thing, there's, you know, they've been real close to the vest about his timeline, if there even is one. He feels like a next season guy for me. Maybe I'm wrong. But they have been through it already, and giving Porter that contract, you know, and no way of really knowing this, but I felt like if there was any hesitation to do it before the Jamal injury, to me, you know, just made him such a priority, because they not only needed him for the long term, they needed him to take another jump this year. And it was kind of a way of making sure he felt the love, making sure he felt supported. And I get all that, but now, and it's easy to Monday morning quarterback. So that's my disclaimer, but it's a tough thing to look at right now. First and foremost, you hope Michael can get on the floor eventually and do his thing, you know, healthy, and do his thing for a long, long time. But we knew when he came into the draft that he had big time issues on the back, and the medicals on him, you know, are the type of thing that executives still talk about to this day. And he'd gotten through it, had a very good year last year, but man, that's just rough. I mean, you give him, you know, that kind of money, and then a few weeks later, he's on the shelf. It puts him in a really bad spot, not only this year, but obviously just the way they're building that thing out there.
Yeah, one of the teams, obviously, that will always get brought up for passing on Michael Porter Jr. is the Clippers. You know, they had the two lottery picks. One of them, they swapped with Charlotte and got Shea, who obviously you saw swap with Shea and several, basically their future for Paul George. And then they use the other one, Jerome Robinson. They shouldn't have picked Jerome, but now you understand why they didn't pick Michael. And it's really unfortunate. You saw Michael already lost 1 year, his rookie year, to the back issue. Played great and emerged, got his money. But, and now you got a situation where Michael's not the only wing that the Denver Nuggets lost to a season-ending injury. PJ Dozier, who
right.
Michael Malone loves, and was like, look, PJ can make whatever mistakes he needs to make. Like, he needs to, like, that's what Michael Malone said in preseason when he visited LA. He professed how much he trusted Dozier and wanted him to be a big part of what they were doing this year. And he tears his ACL. So that's on top of Jamal Murray. That's on top of Nikola Jokic. You didn't miss any time last year, which was a big part of why he was the MVP. Now he's dealing with this sprained wrist issue, and this stuff snowballs. It's rough. There are some teams that deal with it. They get the bad cards, and hopefully, you know, Nikola's going to be there, and he's still a problem, and they can still find ways to scratch out wins. And the West isn't that deep and not that good, to be honest with you. So, I don't want to disqualify them from contention just yet. As long as Nikola Jokic is playing, they have a chance to win every game, every other game or so. And I think that's just kind of what you have to look out for. See how they adjust with what's really bound to be a new kind of team than the one that they thought they were having when the season started.
Yeah, I think that they might have missed their window. I think that's like them, like title window, right? They were the West finalists in the bubble, and actually played the Lakers pretty good in that series. If Davis doesn't hit that game winner, I mean, it's possible they get to that bubble finals. And then even last year, remember when they made the Aaron Gordon trade, and it was like, you know, pushing the chips all in. Porter was emerging,
and that lineup Murray clicked right away.
Yeah. It like there were, I know there's plenty of national people out there that have said, like, in retrospect, like they were about, you know, like they were considering Denver the West favorite, essentially, before Murray goes down. Murray went down right before the playoffs. It was in San Francisco, actually. I was at the game. And that, you know, changed a lot of things for them. And by the time Murray gets back, you wonder if Porter will ever be back. And even when Porter was playing the season, you could see the he was kind of gingerly moving. And then remember that he, on the play, I think it's his last play we've seen him, he kind of like missed a dunk in transition because he couldn't get up on it. And then he kind of limped to the locker room. And backs are such tricky things, especially for a guy who wants to be a shooter, right? You know, you got to be like aligned to be like a 45% 3-point shooter. And you know, they went all in. I think they're trying to generate momentum around that city, around that fan base that has been a little bit dull in recent years. I mean, half the fan base can't even watch the team on local TV, and
more than that,
it's just it's tough. Yeah, it's tough timing for them because it seemed like they had, you know, maybe a run of 5, 6, 7 years of contention that now you're wondering, do they even get back to contention?
Yeah, I mean, I just peeked at the ages to remind myself, you know, the timeline question that you're bringing up, Slater. I mean, Jokic is 26. You know, you're talking about Jamal's still 24. You know, Gordon's 26. So I think the more pressing thing is you got an MVP that is going to be looking around, and as much as he has done nothing but talk about, you know, how he's enjoyed Denver and it's been a good fit and things of that nature. Like, if you're him, and I got to cheat here and see how many years he got left on his deal, but the question then becomes, you know, holding on to Jokic. And if he doesn't look around and, you know, and think that the context around him is championship caliber, you know, does he look elsewhere when his next deal comes up in 2023, we're only 2 years away here from unrestricted free agency. So I think that would...
Sam, there's going to be some mad people that you brought that up.
It's just true, man. I mean, it's also so unfortunate. But I hate the fact that, like, you look out in Philly and you got Joel Embiid's prime, you know, partly getting wasted, you know, largely because of the Ben Simmons situation. I just hate seeing guys like this that, you know, aren't put in the best position possible to make the most of their talents. And the Nuggets have done everything they can, and maybe even too much, like we're kind of chronicling here. So that's unfortunate. And then to bring it back to Porter, it's just, you know, I was around the Nuggets a little bit in training camp in San Diego for a couple of days. And it's just, it's crazy to think back on the mood at that time. So Porter, you know, like I was there the day that he addressed the media to talk about his extension, and he was emotional. He was appreciative. He was thankful. He was kind of humbled. And he talked a lot about how his first year, they went to San Diego, same spot, to do training camp. And like you said, Law, like he wasn't even playing. He was at camp, you know, and might as well have just bought a ticket and watched these other dudes play ball. So to go from that to then seemingly, you know, getting rewarded for a good year and being on his way, and then lo and behold, this happens a little bit after, is extremely unfortunate.
Yeah, you guys brought up Nikola's contract, and I'm not going to say a whole lot about it, but dude is he's eligible for a crazy extension summer 2022. And now you're kind of playing out the string this year, and you're just hoping, you know, the expectations have obviously been depressed significantly for Denver. But you just wonder, obviously, Giannis, he took the bag before last season, and they obviously went and had the ultimate pinnacle winning the championship off of that. You just wonder, like those whispers, if they're whispers right now, they're going to go louder. Like, it ain't going to be because y'all brought it up on this pod here. Like, it's reality. Like,
so we don't need to feel guilty, Law.
Yeah. No, like the bag is there, and Jokic can either sign it in 2022 or he can say, I'm away. And we're going to see how uncomfortable it gets a year from now. That's the reality of it. Like, you either get your money when you can get it, or you can be in a $32 million contract year. That's it. That's the only things that'll happen.
And as of now, everywhere he turns, there is uncertainty. And none of this is obviously personal. He loves Jamal Murray. Those dudes are tight. You know what I mean? But he's got to wait and see. How does Jamal look when he comes back? You know, he looks at Porter, a guy that he's helped bring up and have been a mentor to, you know, but what's his future? And that's where it comes with the territory when you're elite, you know, if you're going to have options. And so we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I mean, tough times in Denver. That is the undercurrent here too is it's just, you know, it is a bit of a bummer for this season. It's just, man, like all these what ifs all over the league, you know, all these teams that could have been this, could have been that. And a lot of dudes on the shelf, mostly for health reasons, some for, you know, vaccine reasons, things of that nature. But, you know, anyway, yeah, a lot of tough stuff.
Well, Sam, that's also why the schedule is one where if you're the Suns and the Warriors, you take these wins and you don't apologize for them because it could happen to you. You know, I think Steve Kerr was mentioning yesterday before the game in LA, like that you're going to hit a rough spot at some point. You're going to get injuries. You're going to get guys who play poorly. You're going to get just something weird that happens. Like, I don't know, a global pandemic sweeping the nation. You know, we've already seen that. Hopefully that's, I'm not trying to foretell anything.
Yeah.
You know, like a new variant. Just what happens. Yeah.
Yep,
it does. This is just the nature of the NBA schedule, and if you get these wins, they do matter. They really matter if you stack them up, because if nothing else, they give you some cushion for when the tide starts rolling back the other way.
Well, I'll give you an example of that. Last season, the Warriors they just sat at 500 for so much of the season, and then Steph Curry falls in Houston. On, you know, it was when there was no fans and the benches were very spread out. He shoots a three at the end of the third quarter, backpedals towards the bench, but the bench is so spread out, he trips and he hits his tailbone on a stair, and, you know, cracks his tailbone and missed, I think, about 8 games. And, you know, the Warriors overall went 2-7 in his 9 missed games last year, and that put him in the play-in. They were in the play-in, they lose the play-in, they don't make the playoffs. This season, let's say Steph Curry has to miss 9 games coming up in 2 weeks. They could survive that. Even if they went 4-5, 3-6 over those 9 games, it's something like, you know, add 3-6 to their record right now, they're still 21-8. And that's what happens when you just pile up wins. So it is important.
Well, since you're doing the fun with numbers later, I'll repeat what I wrote in my column today, just to almost troll the fans who get tired of the positive Warriors talk from yesteryear. They are currently still on pace to win 73 games. Just, you know, throwing that out there.
They don't want that. They don't want that attention.
All right, let's pivot here, because Law, that was a good segue there. Where you know you talk about like take the wins where you can get them, and the idea that so many teams are down. Your Clippers are interesting. You know, they get off to that 1-4 start. You know, right now 11-9, and we're recording on Monday. They got a game against New Orleans tonight, so we'll see what happens there. But they're a good squad, and you wrote today about the defense. I mean, and the idea that their turnovers in that game against the Warriors, you know, were spoiling the defense. We were sitting there watching the game and kind of laughing every couple of quarters about how, like, you peek at the box score and it's like, oh, look at that. They still have more turnovers than field goals. And for most of the game, that was the case. Not a good calculus. But, you know, overall, Clippers observations to this point, what are you getting out of this group?
Well, they are compensating for the fact that they don't have one of the very best offensive players in the world in Kawhi being healthy. You know, Kawhi makes everything easier on that end of the floor, and we're seeing it. They went from the number 2 offense last year to, through most of November, they're the 25th ranked offense. That is a steep drop off when almost the entire team is back, you know. But the defense has been arguably the best in franchise history. And it's the discipline that you're not seeing offensively right now. You're seeing all of it defensively. They don't foul. They are assignment sound. Even when they have these turnovers, they have done a relatively good job of running back and trying to save buckets. One of those buckets were saved is what set Steph Curry off when he was sprawling into the baseline and just jumped up and just exploded into the referee. So, like, you're seeing a team that is well coached. And while it's not having the results when they have the ball, they're doing a really good job of understanding what they're supposed to do defensively to give them a chance, not just to win games, but just to come back in games. Like when they're down 20, it's like, oh, we can come back. And it ain't because of the offense. They bring a bunch of guys in, Terrence Mann, Luke Kennard, Isaiah Hartenstein, and they're just like, we're going to raise the energy. We're going to make it hell for you to try and get your shots. And all of a sudden, 20-point deficit becomes 10-point deficit. Bad teams, they wind up winning those games. So they have a long way to go, But this is a Clippers team that if they can clean up the offense some, then they're going to be in great shape when the schedule gets really hellish after Christmas.
So I watched them last couple of days. I haven't written about them, and I want to and need to at some point. But things that have crossed my mind. For one, Ty Lue can coach, man. Like, you just see the impact that he has. And I admittedly, I keep thinking about it in naturally in the context of the Lakers, because you're here in L.A., and I'm watching both teams. And then, you know, I'm writing the other day about Frank Vogel potentially being in trouble if the Lakers don't figure this stuff out. And naturally, you think back to the way they got to Frank Vogel and the whole idea that, you know, this was Ty Lue's job if he wanted it. But to his credit, Ty, you know, he put his foot down in the negotiations and was like, I'm a championship coach and I want a championship contract, you know, level contract. And they didn't get a deal done. The Clippers got themselves a very good coach. The idea that they got this kind of a defense without a former defensive player of the year is incredible. And then you see, I know the word is overused, but you do see the culture that he has built with his guys. They are on a string defensively. They compete with the same type of ethos. Hartenstein is a crack up. Like, he's fun to watch. He's a bit of an enforcer, you know, seems to be a difference maker for him. You just see his imprint. And then you start thinking, and again, you know, as I was having a chance to at least bend a few years down here and get a little bit of a sense on the Kawhi front of what people are thinking, it's like, damn, okay, so he very well may come back. And even had somebody put it to me this way, like, it behooves the rest of them to win as many games as possible without him, because naturally you incentivize him to, like, whatever level of sacrifice, you know, there might be with him coming back, not necessarily early, but just pushing it. We all know Kawhi does not like to push anything on the health front. You know, that if they fall off, he's not going to be incentivized. But if they can be in the mix and then have that idea of adding him to be almost an instant title contender again, then maybe he'd be game for that. I mean, that potentially is a pretty dangerous formula.
Right. And that's why all these games matter.
Are they destined for another 4-5 series with Dallas? I just feel like they're going to play a first-round series with Dallas. I'm looking right now at the West. You know, you mentioned in the mix. I think they're in the argument for fourth-best team in the conference. I think, you know, as our John Hollinger wrote today, it is Warriors-Suns up top. But Utah is, to me, a clear third, probably closer to 1-2 than the mix below. Utah actually has a better point differential than Phoenix right now. They just blow teams out. They have the top offense in the league. But then beyond those top three, who do you think is the fourth best team in the West? I mean, to me, it probably is between the Clippers and Mavericks right now, because I don't think any of us are ready to say the Lakers until they really figure stuff out. Portland has the 28th ranked defense. I saw them in San Francisco the other day. They can't defend anything. Minnesota is 10-10. Nice story. Not in the mix for fourth best team in the conference. Memphis and Denver sitting at the bottom. We already talked about Denver's problems. Like Law said it earlier, the West really isn't that good. So I might even say the Clippers are the fourth best team in the conference. And if you can say that, they will be in the mix. And then maybe you get the Kawhi carrot at the end of the tunnel and they're a contender.
Yeah, it's hard for me to think about the playoffs right now with this team. And mainly because of the offense. I mean, they already have more five. They already have more 20 turnover games this season than all of last year. They already have more games where they have more turnovers and assists in a game this year than all of last year. They already have more games where they failed to have 100 points per 100 possessions in a game than all of last year. So the offense is in a really bad place. And the thing is, they're supposed to be guys back. They just got Marcus Morris back. They got Scott Serge Ibaka back. They'll get Nicholas Batum back when he's out of health and safety protocols. But they're in a race for integrating these guys to do what they're supposed to do offensively before things get difficult. And I'm not talking about their opponents. I mean, I don't think they're tripping about any team they're facing because of the defense, but they're giving bad teams like the Pelicans, who they've already lost to this year, chances to win games that they need simply because they don't have it together on a quarter-to-quarter basis with the ball. Like Paul George, he's having a great season, an admirable season. He's played every game, heavy minutes, heavy usage percentage, but Paul is starting to struggle with efficiency on all fronts, shooting, finishing, taking care of the basketball. Ty's got to help him. his teammates have to help him. And it can't just be all the kumbaya stuff. You can get a bunch of guys who love each other, get along great, wear the Clip Gang or Don't Bang hoodies, and you can be a 500 team. It's not going to matter. Like, they got to be better.
No doubt. But everyone beyond those top three in the West is basically feels like a 500 team at this point. The Mavs are the four seed, and they have a negative point differential right now.
Yeah, I feel like the Mavs should have a better record. I mean, that's a team that, you know, Porzingis is playing better than he has in the past. That doesn't add up. I mean, I'd be tempted to pick them as your fourth best team. The Lakers are like in a class all their own as far as I don't even know what to think of them. But the Paul George stuff you hit on, Law, is I think maybe worth diving a little bit deeper on. You know, I looked at the minutes. It's 35.6. Just it's the most in the last 3 years since he was in OKC. Nothing crazy, but, you know, about 2 minutes more than last season. You know, he's 31 now. The usage side, you know, you can, like you said, on the offense, you can see where individually, sure, he's all-star caliber, but as a, you know, collectively, it's not working. How concerning do you think that is, considering it does feel like the strain put on him just 20 games in is already pretty significant?
Yeah, I'm concerned. I'm concerned just because it's not going to get easier. They're in the middle of a 5-7 right now, and it's not even the first 5-7 that they've had, and it's not the craziest. The 5-7 that they have directly after Christmas is treacherous. They get the Nuggets, and then the second night of back-to-back, a rested Nets team that will play on Christmas. Then they go to the Eastern Conference and play their first road games over there in Boston. They go to Toronto for New Year's Eve, and then they get out of customs the next day on New Year's Day to play the Nets team, who again will be at a rest advantage. You know, they got a 2-week Grammy trip. That'll take them out of LA for the last 2 weeks of January. We're not even there yet. And Paul is already like, you know, flagging a bit. And so Paul does a lot to get himself ready for these games. He does a lot. Like we didn't get him until 2 hours after the Warriors game ended Sunday because he has a very detailed post-game routine. And you understand why this guy's played hurt through multiple playoff series. He's had the dull shoulder injuries. People act like he didn't, you know, have an open fracture of his leg just 7 years ago and the kind of player he's come back to be. I mean, Paul George has been incredible as far as his durability and just sustainability this season, but you just can't take that for granted. You know, he hasn't missed time. Reggie Jackson hasn't missed time. Eric Bledsoe hasn't missed time. The Clippers, they have a strained roster situation because Kawhi is out and, you know, Paul, he's done great as far as actually taking the leadership mantle on and off the floor, on and off the ball. But you just wonder, like, okay, when's it going to come time where he's going to have to miss games, and what does his team look like when he does?
It would certainly help if his good friend Reggie Jackson would stop having games like he did against the Warriors. And I'm looking at his game log here. I mean, he gives him an Easter egg yesterday, 0-for-5 from the field, just played 21 minutes. You know, you go back four games before that against New Orleans and the loss that you mentioned, he's 2-for-11, 4 points, you know, and inconsistency has always kind of been part of the Reggie Jackson experience. So it's like on the one hand, he's getting, you know, I mean, he knew when he re-signed that Kawhi being out was going to mean opportunity for him. But, you know, overall, you're coming in at 39.8% from the field, 33 from beyond the arc, and he's putting up almost 9 a game. So the efficiency is a problem there with Reggie as Paul just kind of looks around for help.
Yeah, and the thing is, when Reggie's really good, the Clippers are rarely bad. Like, you know, Reggie being good means the Clippers are good. And what's going to have to help Reggie and Paul is Marcus. Marcus Morris took an extra month to get ready for the season, just like the year before. Last season, Marcus didn't play basically the first 3 weeks. And that's how Nicholas Batum went from, you know, bargain basement pickup to a guy who was going to wind up leading the Clippers in total minutes last season. Even with Paul and Kawhi on the roster, Nicholas Batum led the Clippers in total minutes. They've never had Nicholas Batum out for a week like they just are experiencing now with him in health and safety protocols. Now that Marcus is back, it's time for him to play like a guy who signed that 4-year, $64 million contract and take shots away from Paul and Reggie, be that guy who can be a mid
post mismatch, guy who hits threes, guy who really elevates the offense in a way that, you know, is not mistake prone. Marcus's game is not heavy turnover because Marcus generally is like, I'm not passing it. So they need that kind of guy. That'll help Reggie and Paul's efficiency significantly, but that's the opportunity here. In the next 3 weeks, the Clippers are either going to be peaking because all these guys are getting back into the flow of how they were supposed to be playing when training camp broke, or we're going to have some bad, uncomfortable conversations come holiday season.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
Slater, I think we should end on a Warriors note. I just was browsing the old web as we were chatting here and getting reminded that, as you and Shams Charania have reported yesterday, Klay Thompson is headed to the G League, the latest step in his progression. And this obviously, you know, fits into the conversation we just had a few minutes ago about the Warriors. The idea that they're sitting here at 18-2, top of the league, crazy net rating, crazy defense, crazy offense, and they're adding Klay Thompson to the mix. Now, so last night, Law, Slater and I may have had a few adult beverages here at LA, and we're hanging out talking about the, you know, the team that he covers. And we had a good debate. Our guy, Dan Wicke from the LA Times was with us, and the debate was about Klay and the question of what version of Klay is coming back. Slater and I were like immediately on the same page, and me only because I listened to him and he knows more than I do about Klay and the Warriors, where he was just like, yo, people don't get it. Like the chatter on Klay is that Klay is Klay. And it's not, I'm not trying to build up expectations and say he's going to be an all-star right out the gate, because, you know, you look at it, you say 2 years not on the basketball court, there's just, you're waving red flags like crazy. But based on what Warriors people have been seeing and saying, you know, it seems like potentially a very good version of Klay Thompson is coming back around Christmas. And that is just not fair to the rest of the league. It's incredibly fair to Klay, who deserves to play ball again. So what do you think there?
Well, Anthony, you got Klay starting, right?
Yeah, for sure. You don't think they want that moment from Washington State at the starting lineup? Yeah, no, Jordan Poole will go to the bench. But yeah, the buzz is good.
Can he wear the headband? Can we get the semi-pro version of Klay?
Sounds like
for real.
I mean,
he looks like he's leaned into it.
He seemed to be indicating the other day that that's going to be the look.
Yes.
We'll see. But he tires quickly in these scrimmages, but the people who watch the scrimmages are like, you know, early on in these scrimmages when he's coming off pin downs, he's hitting three threes in a 75 second, you know, span, and moving like Klay Thompson, particularly off the ball. And he's physical on the perimeter defensively still, and laterally, you know, is he prime Klay Thompson laterally, which has made him such a good perimeter defender? No. And I'm not sure he'll ever be, you know, all defensive second team type Klay Thompson. But, you know, I've asked a couple of people, like, you know, when he comes back, do you view him as a plus defender adding to the league's best defense? And they're like, yeah, like he's not going to get blown by. He's very prideful on that end, and he's going to work really hard on that end because he always has. And that, I mean, you guys know that's such a big part of defense. Like, do you care about defense? Do you know schemes, and are you physical? And he is. And so they, I mean, even if it's 18 minutes to start, which sounds like the number that it will be as it gradually builds up, the reality of Klay Thompson compared to other star names out there that you might be bringing back, like let's say Brooklyn brought Kyrie back into the fold at some point. That's very good for Brooklyn, but it's still like, okay, you got to shift around the offense. You got to hand him the ball for several possessions per game. It changes a lot of the calculus. With the Warriors, you plug Klay Thompson into any team. Like, he's such an off-ball guy. I mean, the guy who legendarily scored 60 points on 11 dribbles, like, you just plug him right in. He's going to play defense. He's going to spread the floor. Even if he's not shooting, he's disrupting the defense because, hey, Klay Thompson's on that wing. You better stick on that wing. It is kind of a scary calculus for the league if Klay Thompson is even shades of himself early on. And it sounds like he'll be a little bit even better than shades of himself.
What's crazy is last year, the Warriors, they were inconsistent with Kelly Oubre starting. Kelly Oubre winds up getting hurt. And his last start was like April 10th or something like that. So the last month or so, they start in Kent Bazemore. Jordan Poole is coming off the bench. They were the number one defense then from that point to the end of the season. They should have made the playoffs with that. They messed up the play-in. Whatever. Kent Bazemore obviously moved on. Now Clay's going to take that starting lineup and Poole's going to go back to being a really damn good sixth man, a guy who has just... You know, he does so much on the ball, you know, and that fits perfectly into what a lot of teams think of when they think of, like, you know, high usage six men. And now you got this guy, Clay, who I'm telling you, ACL and Achilles is tough. I watched DeMarcus Cousins try and play from that. And DeMarcus, I'm just glad that he got himself another deal. You know, he's going to be with the Bucks. So I'm very interested to see if Clay really is that guy who can move even for 25 minutes a game on both ends of the floor like he did to make him so special. But I mean, look, I felt like the big thing with Golden State is their continuity is special. They have four guys who were on the team 5 years ago. There's plenty of NBA teams who can't say that they have one guy who was on their team 5 years ago, or only have one or two guys. They've got the Warriors that have Clay, Steph, Draymond Green, Kevon Looney, and if you want to count Andre Iguodala, and I don't because he left and came back, but you could count Andre. That is what makes that team special. So, I mean, you're dropping Clay into a role where it's like you have Andrew Wiggins, who is basically, you forget about him, and he's just been so good in his role. Steph, Draymond, they know what they're supposed to do. Kevon, he knows what he's supposed to do. You have just a bunch of guys who have institutional knowledge about what the heck they're supposed to do. If Clay's role is simply just be Clay, that's, yes, that does sound scary. I want to see how much he can play, how consistent he can be, and then I'll go from there as far as my excitement level there.
No, those are all good points, Ola. I mean, you talk about just the collective experience and the personality of teams. The Warriors have got it all over everybody in the league right now as far as that continuity and the experience. So great stuff, gentlemen. Fittingly, Slater and I are now going to get ready for Warriors practice here in LA and go connect with that group yet again. It's like the old days, Slater. You're going to have national dudes around you and national crew just chasing and fans. And you're probably going to have to take a few selfies along the way because you're a celebrity in your own right, you know?
Oh, yeah. Phoenix is going to thump them twice this week and quiet this noise. And tampering next week. No Warriors next week on tampering.
Yeah, good luck with that. All right, Law, appreciate you, man. It was fantastic seeing you out here. Keep up the good work. Everybody make sure they read Law's stuff. I got to say, as a quick tip of the hat, Law, it was fun watching games next to you because, I mean, I know that your job inherent, like, you got to watch the game. Beat writers got to know their team. Slater, like, Law watches the game. You know what I mean? Like, really, really watches the game. And I didn't admit this at the time. He caught me a few times when he'd kind of lean over and give me an observation. And then I would look at my computer screen and I was getting distracted, like, you know, jumping on Amazon or something. And Law is like, yo, did you see what they just did here? Like, all right, I got to lock in. Law is good at his job. And so go read his stuff. I literally bought a Christmas present while I was sitting next to Law for my wife. And then I was like, yeah, maybe watch the game, Sam. Let's do what we do. So appreciate you, man. Great seeing your face. Great hanging with you a bit. And Slater, more Warriors talk next week. Get ready, buddy.
Hey, great to see you guys in the city of Angel. Until next time.
Be good, guys.